Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Revolution Radio. Today is Wednesday, May 11th, 2011. I hope everyone is okay. There was a big exercise on the New Madrid fault line today. If anyone wants to call in and talk about how that went, that was good. That would be great. In the meantime, I'd like to welcome all those who will be listening later and those who are here now. I'd like to give a special shout out to our troops out there fighting for us. Not a very special hello to any of the officers who are following Obama's orders as we continue to blunder about in the world. The background noise here is my dogs who are pretty hungry. But tonight, let me say hello to the chat room. Hello. Yes, what's the NLE 2011 this month? National something exercise. Anyway, this is all going on. There are a couple of interesting videos on my blog, one by a Baptist preacher who is kind of talking about the way the New World Order is using numbers and anniversaries to plan and stage certain things, like, for example, April 19th being a day of Waco national level exercise. Okay. Great. Let us know a little bit about that, U.S. vet, please, and I'll announce it over the air so people know. Oh, that's today. It was today. The focus on the New Madrid fault was today, I believe, May 11th. Is that correct? Anyway, of course, there's big flooding that's going on there. There's other stuff to talk about. But let me do a couple things this evening. Tonight, I'd just like to do a very quick review of the last couple of weeks, pointing to some posts and kind of figuring out where we're going, taking a look at the broader picture, the broader scheme. Next, I'd like to play an interview of Laura Ingraham with the president of the Black Chamber of Commerce that is quite illustrative. And Pastor Manning put that on. It's about an eight-minute interview. And then I'd like to read to you, basically for your feedback and also so that we have a verbal record of this, a report that I am writing that started out as an explanation, basically, of what a natural-born citizen is. But it started before Obama released his fake document. So this report now has to basically include how a dual citizen got to be president of the United States or sit in that office and what happened to get him there, because this is the fraud that's happening. I'll tell you where I'm going and thinking right now is that someone is going to have to file a lawsuit right now, and the only people who will have standing are going to be the other candidates. Now, we know the standard Republican candidates are not going to do this, but I don't know if Donald Trump will do this. But I think there's sufficient, obviously we know there's a problem. But if he is not challenged, he's going to be presumed eligible because he's there, no matter what state laws exist. And I think it might be, and Al Gore is wrong, I think, in terms of no controlling legal authority. There is a controlling legal authority, the Constitution. Oh, I think that's what you're referring to. Anyway, so writing this story is really about what happened to us in 2008 and how it's continued and who was involved. This report will name names. I don't know where this is going to go yet, but I'm going to be reading the first few chapters or the first few sections that I have. It's designed to be short, but to the point and very heavily referenced. I take no credit for all this terrific work that so many people have done. I am delighted to have learned and share as much as I can of their terrific work on my blog and here as well. So I'll be reading you also the references. So, no laws requiring anyone to adhere to Article 2, Section 1, Paragraph 5. Well, Al Gore is incorrect. I think it would be in terms of vetting and so forth. But adhering to Article 2, Section 1, yes, there are. And you do have to go to the 20th Amendment, which basically requires that the president be certified and qualified. Well, the legal repercussions really are the guy should never get in office. But see, what we had happen was a perversion of the constitutional process. That's what happened. It got perverted and avoided. And so that's right, there are no laws requiring vetting, and I'll be talking about that too. So let's start with what happened. Okay, Donald Trump comes up with talking about the birth certificate. He's goaded by basically Whoopi Goldberg to do so. The threat of Jerome Corsi's book is coming up, and the ever-constant pressure of us is there. Now, I'd like to just, you know, remember we all, excuse me, should be thankful for what Donald Trump did, but he could not have done it without all the work of everybody here who's listening and everyone who's pursued this issue. He couldn't really have proceeded with confidence unless he knew there was something going on. So we're to be credited there, too. So right before the wedding, right, he releases the royal wedding, he releases the worst piece of junk that was disposed of within an hour of its release. He's very arrogant and smug about it. I guess the word is guileful. And the thing goes out, and once again, everybody pounces on the invalidity of it, and we don't have any paper document to put out there. So Saturday night, he's at the press conference dinner, and he laughs about it. And he's, again, the word is guileful, which is cunning and deceitful and arrogant. And, I don't know if anyone saw the look of Donald Trump, but it wasn't very pleasant. But I think the whole release of something as fake and as stupid as that is such an insult. And, of course, he releases it. Last week, Terry Lakin is being released on Friday. By the way, I would like to report that Terry Lakin will be speaking live to the nation Friday night, May 13th, at 7 o'clock p.m. If you hang on 1 second, I will be put this in the chat room. This is the link that you need to follow. 7 p.m. on Friday night, May 13th, Terry Lakin. There's the link. randysprings.com/subpages/streamingradio.htm. Okay, very good. Anyway, so Saturday night he jokes around about it. In the meantime, all the work we're doing to show what a fake and fraud it is. And Sunday night he pulls out the quote-unquote Bin Laden kill, a story which, with its rapidity and depth and boldness and obvious contrast to the issue of his eligibility, obvious distraction, what could you say? Everybody was pretty quiet there, but as we have been quiet to see what happens, we're finding out that the story is completely unfolding, and it just once again raises the issue of his both competence and eligibility, and the questions haven't gone away. And World Net Daily keeps dribbling out various little things, like at 5 years old they didn't know what his citizenship was, and the U.S. government was trying to investigate that as his mother was messing around with the passports. We still haven't been able to see anything. Remember, if you are adopted, something happens to your original birth certificate. It's remade or pasted over, or a new one is pasted over. It's remade as if the new parents, the adoptive parents, were the original birth parents. Okay, let me see. There we go. Thank you. Sorry, I'm looking in the chat room. So, in the adoption, there, you know, his release of a quote-unquote original, which is obviously botched, does not show his adoption by Lolo Satoru. And there is no adoption record, but it's a vital record that should have been accompanied by that. And that raises the specter once again of the main issue he's hiding is that adoption and his name, Barry Sotero, which we know that's what his name was. And we know it was probably very convenient for him to go to school under that name at Punahou in Hawaii and also at Occidental, Lolo Sotero's alma mater, as a foreign student. And to travel all over the place, basically on a foreign passport. So it raises the issue, is you know, Did he just forget to change his name? In a lot of ways, maybe that's it. But on the other hand, with so much cover-up and so many millions, how could it be that stupid? I mean, wouldn't they have found something like that? You know, the people who are covering up everything for him? So, I don't know. I can't believe that a little factor like that would be an issue. But it's very clear that he's holding his stuff for whatever political gain he has, including he had to waste the Bin Laden card now as opposed to the 2012 election, when that might have really swung the thing. So he's used that card, he's lost that momentum. Now, let me sidetrack here just for a second. I think we need more research to really, well, maybe we don't, to pin down Bin Laden as a CIA asset. And whoever they got in Pakistan, in my view, it was someone of value, but probably not Bin Laden. And maybe it was just a convenient target. Maybe it was someone who was going to squeal on him. But certainly the way he was killed and so forth and so on is, it's un-American. And the biggest terrorist in the world is not captured for all his contacts and so forth and so on. So it was obvious political card. There may be some behind the scenes stuff going on with the military leaking information about Obama, especially the photoshopped raid pictures and the fake pictures and the improbable timeline. A great website called Wake Up America 1776 has a very good expose on this whole issue, including an excellent map. So we have the Bin Laden piece, but it hasn't slowed down anything. As you know, I have kept writing about this, and I've challenged the veracity of anything that comes out of this administration now. And then after all of that, then he's filmed passing notes to a general as he gets off Air Force One in Cape Canaveral in Florida, where he's again campaigning and taking people's money to try to win the 2012 election. There's something totally wrong with this whole thing. The polls are coming out now saying he has a 60% approval rating. We know that the polls are going to lie about this. We know because the media shut down everything on the birth certificate and shut down everything on Bin Laden, that they will do anything that Obama wants. They're in the tank there. So personally, I unplugged the thing and shut it off because I'm not going to participate in supporting that bullshit fed to the American people. It's truly unbelievable. All standards have been thrown out the window. We knew that was happening before, but there's no one of any integrity in the news, and I hope that they lose all their ratings. So, anyway, with that in mind, so where are we? A national level exercise, I think, happened today, May 11th. As you know, it was December 11th and 12th, 1811, or it was December 20th, 1811, of a large magnitude earthquake there. I will be doing an article on this, but the bottom line is the Mississippi embayment, as they say. It's the Mississippi River, a big embayment, a feature that's filled with sediments that liquefy upon shaking. And the New Madrid Fault is very, very deep. You don't see very many surface expressions of it, except you see the volatile nature of the area because of what they call sand boils and other kinds of things where stuff is seeping up from the bottom and under pressure and seeps up. Now, an earthquake there, yeah, there's been increased seismicity, the storms that are happening there and so forth, the tremendous flooding. The weight of the water is not likely to cause anything, but if the Army keeps blowing up levees, the shaking could certainly liquefy sediments. And what happens then is you have buildings fall down and sinkholes develop and major underways and throughways, highways are all built on this material. Nuclear power plants are built on this material. There's one smokestack that's about 800 feet high. This was the biggest concern and problem in 1811 when this thing happened, was falling chimneys and smokestacks. Lots of people got killed by things that were falling and sinking into the ground because of the soil, quote-unquote soil, turning into basically liquid. So there are lots of things to watch out for, and in any case, the use of HAARP to magnify any storms or to magnify vibration, like perhaps in Japan, easy with those kinds of things, but you may not need to have a huge earthquake to do that. So, you know, can they manufacture something that is not as big as an earthquake? Who knows? But I am very wary of that, and I would, again, we'll be doing a post on this, but time to pull out some things on this. I wrote a post right after Obama released his latest fake electronic image to talk about the cover-up that is now sure to happen by false flags. And everything that's happening now is a false flag and timed and planned for this period. So I'm pretty alarmed, and I hope you're concerned as well. Okay. All right. Now, there is an interview that I'd like to play, something that Pastor Manning did. And we're going to go to the interview and then right to a music break right after that. This is, I believe, about 6 minutes. Pastor Manning covered this interview that Laura Ingraham had with the president of the Black Chamber of Commerce. So here we go.
Laura Ingraham interviewed this black entrepreneur named Harry Alford, and he is the president of the Black Chamber of Commerce in Washington, D.C., and he goes on to say some things that I believe, in fact, I know, that a large percentage of black people are going to say, about 10 to 15% of black people are going to be saying, are saying now. Let's hear this. You're going to find it very interesting.
Now there's an interesting issue brewing among business owners, and we thought we'd bring on Harry Alford from the National Black Chamber of Commerce to tell us what's going on, and he joins us now. Hey, Mr. Alford, how are you?
Fine, Laura. How are you?
I have a theory, and you and I disagree, by the way, on a lot of issues, and if we have time, we'll get into those. But on this issue, I find it fascinating. I come at it from a free market perspective. Okay, I look at the landscape of this country right now. I see we spent $1 trillion on a stimulus. I see we spent $1.2 trillion initially on the down payment on Obamacare. I see $14 trillion in debt. I see China on the rise and India on the rise, and America 70% believing we're on the wrong track. The way that African Americans and all Americans are going to have a better life is if we grow the gross domestic product of this country and become more productive. In my mind, the core moves that this administration has made has been anti-business. Do you disagree?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. He is anti-business, and it and my wife tells me not to say this, but it's starting to look Marxist to me.
Marxist? You voted for him.
The worst mistake I ever made in my life.
Why did you vote for him?
Because he was black. And that is a lesson that I will take to my grave.
So you felt compelled to vote for him, and that's an honest answer, which I appreciate.
Well, it was hope. But, you know, hope isn't hiring. Hope isn't lowering the price of gasoline. You know, this kind of hope is he wants, and he said it to the San Francisco Chronicle. You can look this up. He wanted the price of gasoline to go to $6 to $7 a gallon so that we can reduce our carbon footprint. He said this, and he's doing it. It's $5 a gallon right now in D.C. and still rising about a nickel every 3 or 4 days. It's crazy. And he's smiling.
Well, what do you
this
think about his?
Dangerous. Huh?
Well, what do you think about his statement the other day, after Donald Trump and all that birth certificate thing? And he said, "Look, it's time to get serious, and we have to leave these sideshows behind." And then he hopped off to be with Oprah, and then went off to the fundraisers.
Yeah, his serious is dangerous. I love this country too much to be quiet about this guy. He is wrecking us at a time that we need to be strong. He is dangerous, and I'm going to do all I can to get the black community 1 to 2 to 3 million votes to go to whoever runs against him.
Do you like Donald Trump?
He's a businessman.
Okay, just stop it. Just stop it. It's getting repulsive. Listen, friends. This interview is classic on what's happening to our beloved nation with respect to how fearful people are of Obama. Laura Ingraham, this man just said Obama is wrecking our nation. He's destroying our nation. Now, this is a black man who is the president of 1.9 million black businesses and entrepreneurs here in America. He made the statement on national radio that Obama is destroying our nation. He is wrecking our economy. He is a Marxist, and the only reason why this black man of this caliber voted for Obama was because he was black. And he's going to go on in this interview to say Obama knew nothing about business, and it is obvious he doesn't know anything about business. But there are two things here. Thing number one is that Laura Ingraham had these three major pieces of red meat thrown to her that she could have devoured, and asking more piercing questions, follow-up questions about, well, why do you say he's a Marxist, and what does that mean to the black community, he's a Marxist, and why are you saying this? Isn't he supposed to be on his policies and Marxist and socialist policies in favor of poor people, that the rich give to the poor? She didn't touch it. Then he comes back and says that the only reason why he voted for Obama was because Obama was black. That was racist. It's outright racist. Not only him, but 97% of the black community acted in the most racial way and caused 2008 to be the most racist year in the history of this republic. She didn't touch it. And then he comes back and gives her another piece of juicy red meat and says to her, the man is wrecking the nation, and he's going to do everything within his power to make sure that he can get at least 1 to 3 million black people to vote for anybody but Obama. And you know what she does? She says, what do you think about Donald Trump? I mean, that's number one. What Laura Ingraham is doing is she's afraid. The woman has no guts. She has no. She's dancing around those issues because she's afraid that it's going to cost her job. She's afraid it's going to cost her popularity with the Obama supporters. This has got to stop, America. It's got to stop. This is the phoniest. Here's a black man who is the president of an organization of 1.9 million members throwing out all this red meat. And she won't touch it. She's dancing around it. Because the fix is in. The word is in. You speak against Obama, you lose your job. You speak against Obama, you lose your advertiser. You speak against Obama, you lose your connect with other people like Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh and the CBS and ABC. You speak against Obama, you are blacklisted. And Laura Ingraham, you are... What? Why? This is what's happening. All this red meat. Harry Alford, God bless you, bro. I mean, any interviewer would have had this would have been the stellar interview of all times under other circumstances. But Laura's afraid to touch it. And I'm clear that a lot of other people will not speak out against Obama, and everybody promotes him. The media is promoting Obama in the face of the stomped-down truth. I'm James David Manning. I'm on the battlefield. I promise you, I'll never turn, and I will not quit. And I promise you that we are in victory. It's just a matter of days, but we are in victory. When this black man says that he's going to try to persuade at least 3 million people to vote for anybody, Humpty Dumpty, other than Obama, the job is getting done because the truth is winning out. And I give God the praise. It's just a few more days now before we stand in the full winner's circle. This is the Manning Report.
Get ready for the Manning Report. Thank you.
Welcome back to Revolution Radio. It's a lovely evening here in the desert. It is very warm but cool for people here this evening. Shez, it's really nice to see you, and I am grateful that you came by and for that extra support and the love and light. Thank you so much. I really needed it this time. So what I'm going to do right now is read to you my take on what a natural-born citizen is. Like I said at the top of the hour, I am writing a report, which I hope will be read by millions. But it started out just to write about what is a natural-born citizen. And then when Obama released the latest forgery, I felt it was really time to lay this out, because it truly is birth certificate fraud, which is what we're looking at. So I'm going to start, first of all, with my take on natural-born citizen. All of you are welcome to give me some help on this and send me some notes and so forth. The natural-born citizen. Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 of the U.S. Constitution states, "No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the Constitution, or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution, shall be eligible to the office of President. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained to the age of 35 years and been 14 years of resident within the United States." As written in the Constitution, the term natural-born citizen describes the required characteristic of the President and Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces. Simply stated, that characteristic is allegiance. A natural-born citizen is born with unalienable and undivided allegiance to the United States. To be born with this characteristic means birth in the United States to citizen parents owing no foreign allegiances. No act of law can make someone a natural-born citizen. It's a condition inherent at birth. Reading from the case, Supreme Court case Minor v. Happersett, quote, "The Constitution does not in words say who shall be natural-born citizens. Resort must be had elsewhere to ascertain that." What body of law did the framers of the Constitution turn to in linking the words natural-born citizen with the concept of unalienable and undivided allegiance? Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1824 of the appeal to the laws of nature and nature's God as a framework for the American Revolution and the development of the Constitution. Quote, "Our revolution commenced on more favorable ground. We had no occasion to search into musty records, to hunt up royal parchments, or to investigate the laws and institutions of a semi-barbarous ancestry. We appealed to those of nature and found them to be engraved on our hearts." In declaring independence from the British Crown, the founders declared their right to develop a government based on a different set of principles. So, quote, "assumed their separate but equal station, to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled them," that from the Declaration of Independence, "and declared their intent to create a new government for themselves and their children. Under the laws of nature, all men inherit from nature and from nature's God a perfect liberty and independence, of which they cannot be deprived without their consent. These are the unalienable rights referred to in our Constitution." From Vattel on the Law of Nations, "Nations being composed of men, naturally free and independent, and who, before the establishment of civil societies, lived together in a state of nature, nations or sovereign states are to be considered as so many free persons living together in the state of nature." that state of nature being a perfect liberty and independence. The laws of nature applied among the separate nations became the Law of Nations, a body of law which was used as a set of general principles through which to govern and discern the respective obligations and rights among nations. The founders used nature's law and the Law of Nations to both define the elements of citizenship as well as to allocate authority to the appropriate branch of government to define and punish, quote, offenses against the Law of Nations, found in Article 1. From the reference on this body, the Law of Nations, entitled Law of Nations, written by Vattel, quote, the native or natural-born citizens are those born in the country of parents who are citizens. This is the basis for a natural-born citizen in the American Constitution, which consists of both jus soli, or birth in the country, and jus sanguine, or citizenship of the parents. The founders chose to ensure the president's loyalty to America by requiring him to inherit his citizenship from an American father and mother. Thus, the principles of natural law and the Law of Nations were considered, quote, federal common law. Quoting again from Minor, quote, the Constitution does not in words say who shall be natural-born citizens. Resort must be had elsewhere to ascertain that. At common law, with the nomenclature of which the framers of the Constitution were familiar, it was never doubted that all children born in a country of parents who were its citizens became themselves, upon their birth, citizens also. These were the natives or natural-born citizens, as distinguished from aliens or foreigners. Some have equated an English common law citizen with an American natural-born citizen. Birthplace alone is sufficient to be an English common law citizen. Quote, from Minor again, quote, some authorities go further and include as citizens children born within the jurisdiction without reference to the citizenship of their parents. As to this class, there have been doubts, but never as to the first class being those born in a country of parents who were its citizens are natural-born citizens. This second class, born in the U.S. without reference to citizenship, is linked with English common law, which was rejected on the part of the founders. For the 235 years of our existence as a nation, no one had doubts as to the complete allegiance of those born in the country to parents who were citizens of that country. But to those who acquired dual nationality at birth, there were doubts as to their complete allegiance to the United States. The Supreme Court has ruled once, in 1857, on the subject of who is a natural-born citizen, affirming the definition that follows the Law of Nations. In 1866, the original meaning of natural-born citizen was again reaffirmed by John Bingham, quote, father of the 14th Amendment, quote. Quote, he said, I find no fault with the introductory clause, which is simply declaratory of what is written in the Constitution, that every human being born within the jurisdiction of the United States of parents, not owing allegiance to any foreign sovereignty, is, in the language of your Constitution itself, a natural-born citizen. Why did the founders require the commander-in-chief to be a natural-born citizen? Again, the answer rests in the need for complete allegiance to the United States in the face of foreign threats to the nation. John Jay's letter to George Washington in 1787 reaffirms the need for allegiance as a national security measure. Quote, permit me to hint whether it would be wise and seasonable to provide a strong check to the admission of foreigners into the administration of our national government and to declare expressly that the commander-in-chief of the American Army shall not be given to nor devolve on any but a natural born citizen, was born, underlined, unquote. National security was also of concern to Alexander Hamilton, who wrote in Federalist Papers 68, quote, nothing was more to be desired that every practicable obstacle should be opposed to cabal, intrigue, and corruption. Those most deadly adversaries of Republican government might naturally have been expected to make their approaches from more than one quarter, but chiefly from the desire of foreign powers to gain an improper ascendant in our councils. Excuse me. How could they better gratify this than by raising a creature of their own to the chief magistracy of the Union? The president must have no other allegiance but to the United States. No other country may claim any jurisdiction over him. Excuse me. Well, you may listen to that again, but that is my first section on natural born citizen, and I hope it describes it. I hope you understand it after this. I think a particular thing that I've noticed is equating and making the connection between nature's God and law of nature and law of nations and our Constitution versus English law and the English concept of what citizenship is, which is really citizen subject. You're a subject of the king. You're a subject of one person, allegiance to one person. In the United States, your allegiance is to the people through the Constitution. And that's why loyalty was required, and the best way to assure allegiance and loyalty was to require that natural-born citizen to inherit his citizenship from an American mother and an American father, and to be raised here. Barack Hussein Obama. Barack Obama was born to an American mother, and if we accept he was born in Hawaii, he is born in the United States. But he was also born to a father who at the time of his birth was a British subject and passed on this citizenship to his son. Obama does not dispute this fact, as demonstrated in 2008 by his website Fight the Smears, linking to Fact Check. Quote, when Barack Obama Jr. was born on August 4, 1961 in Honolulu, Kenya was a British colony, still a part of the United Kingdom's dwindling empire. Excuse me a second. As a Kenyan native, Barack Obama Sr. was a British subject whose citizenship status was governed by the British Nationality Act of 1948. That same act governed the status of Obama Sr.'s children. The British Nationality of 1948, Part 2, Section 5, subject to the provisions of this section, a person born after the commencement of this act shall be a citizen of the United Kingdom and Colonies, UKC, by descent if his father is a citizen of the United Kingdom and Colonies at the time of his birth. There it is. He's admitted it already. In other words, at the time of his birth, Barack Obama II was born a U.S. citizen by virtue of being born in Hawaii and a citizen of the United Kingdom and Colonies, or the UKC, by virtue of being born to a father who was a citizen of the UKC. Barack Obama II was born a dual citizen with divided allegiance. On the subject of dual citizen, quote, Justice Douglas said of dual nationality in Kawakita v. United States, quote, one who has a dual nationality will be subject to claims from both nations, claims which at times may be competing or conflicting, that one with dual nationality cannot turn that status, quote, into a fair-weather citizenship, unquote, and that circumstances may compel one who has a dual nationality to do acts which otherwise would not be compatible with the obligations of American citizenship. At the age of 5, Obama was adopted by and became an Indonesian citizen in order to live in and attend school in Indonesia. A third allegiance became attached to Barack Obama II. Justice Blackmun commented in Rogers v. Belay case in 1971, that previous case was 1952, by the way, quote, "The Congress has an appropriate concern with problems attendant on dual nationality. These problems are particularly acute when it is the father who is the child's alien parent, and the father chooses to have his family reside in the country of his own nationality. The child is reared, at the best, in an atmosphere of divided loyalty. We cannot say that a concern that the child's own primary allegiance is to the country of his birth and of his father's allegiance is either misplaced or arbitrary." In determining the eligibility of Barack Hussein Obama to the presidency, then the real question is not where he was born, which is something we may never know. No, the real question that has already been answered historically is whether a person born with dual citizenship can be, by definition, a natural-born citizen. 42 presidents of the United States have met the criteria for natural-born citizen, or citizen at the time of adoption of this Constitution, in our 235-year history. Chester Arthur, who became president after an assassination, hid his dual citizenship at birth, resulting from his father not being an American citizen when he was born, by burning all of his papers. Barack Hussein Obama II is trying to dismiss as irrelevant his birth to a foreign father and dual citizenship at birth. Barack Hussein Obama, by his own admission, is a creature of foreign allegiances and is not a natural-born citizen. Okay, I have 15 end notes to this particular piece. Let me know what you think about that. I'm going to take a little music break here, probably about 5 minutes, and you'll recognize the song. I'll be back in 5 minutes. Thanks. Thank you. Again, to Revolution Radio. I tried to stave my dogs off, who are ravenous, but they're still here barking. In any case, good evening. I just read my first chapter on basically natural-born citizen definition and why Obama doesn't meet that definition. And I was going to stop there with this report, just leave it, just as a pure, clean discussion. But really, with this kind of description, it's so clear that he's not a natural-born citizen. How the heck did he get there? So before writing about that, and you all know how he did that, birth certificate fraud, the fraud of the Democratic National Committee, and then the head of the National Democratic National Convention was Nancy Pelosi, so conveniently she ruled the issue dead on January 9th, 2009, so it was a clear conspiracy all the way through. We have to name names here. So before I get to how that happened, and I'm not finished with that section yet, I wrote up this piece, which you may remember, and I'm entitling it Interlude. Did the candidates in Congress understand the natural-born citizen requirements in 2008? Proof that the Congress, and in particular then-Senator Barack Obama, knew and know what an Article II natural-born citizen is found in the proceedings of Senate Resolution 511, recognizing that John Sidney McCain is a natural-born citizen. The resolution was sponsored by Senators Claire McCaskill, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Patrick Leahy, and Tom Coburn. When a question arose as to Senator McCain's birthplace on a military base outside the United States, the resolution was agreed to on April 30th, 2008, and is reprinted here. I'm going to read it in full. Resolution recognizing that John Sidney McCain III is a natural-born citizen. Whereas the Constitution of the United States requires that to be eligible for the office of the president, a person must be a, quote, natural-born citizen, unquote, of the United States. Whereas the term, quote, natural-born citizen, unquote, as that term appears in Article 2, Section 1, is not defined in the Constitution of the United States. Whereas there is no evidence of the intention of the framers or any Congress to limit the constitutional rights of children born to Americans serving in the military, nor to prevent those children from serving as their country's president. Whereas such limitations would be inconsistent with the purpose and intent of the Natural Born Citizen Clause of the Constitution of the United States, as evidenced by the first Congress's own statute defining the term natural-born citizen, whereas the well-being of all citizens of the United States is preserved and enhanced by the men and women who are assigned to serve our country outside of our national borders, whereas previous presidential candidates were born outside of the United States and of America and were understood to be eligible to be president, and whereas John Sidney McCain III was born to American citizens on an American military base in the Panama Canal Zone in 1936, now therefore be it resolved that John Sidney McCain III is a, quote, natural-born citizen, unquote, under Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution of the United States. Although the focus of this resolution was on the birthplace of Senator McCain. This is where Obama starts the birthplace diversion. The resolution also reinforces that two citizen parents reinforce the two citizen parent requirement of the natural born citizen clause of the Constitution, as shown by these clauses: children born to Americans, children born to American citizens, those two clauses there. A curious reference is made to previous presidential candidates being born outside the United States and understood to be eligible. Here is the sentence: whereas previous presidential candidates were born outside the United States and were understood to be eligible to be president, the first seven presidents were born outside the United States before the American Revolution of 1776 and were certainly understood to be eligible. These were the, quote, citizens at the time of the adoption of the Constitution, unquote, referred to in Article 2 of the Constitution as eligible for the presidency. With the exception of Chester Arthur and possibly Barack Obama, the remaining 37 presidents were all born in the United States of two citizen parents. Here's a side comment from me. That statement, without citing it, is obviously a cover for Obama being, quote, born outside the United States, but it is clearly a reference to a clause in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5. Back to my text. Although the resolution is non-binding, it illustrates that Senator Barack Obama and other senators were fully aware of the definition and use of the term natural-born citizen, born in the United States or its territories, of two citizen parents with no foreign allegiances. No similar hearing was conducted for then-Senator Obama. So, hello there. What do you all think about that? You're all listening and asleep, so I assume it's okay. But that is the next piece here of how, in fact, Barack Obama got to be where he is at. Okay, the third chapter then, which is not quite finished, or the third section of this report, is basically birth certificate fraud. And what I'm basing this on is that essentially two factors conducted by the Obama administration or by Obama himself were items that basically prevented a full disclosure of who he was prior to the election. And sure, the media was involved. They were happily involved. But Barack Obama was the one who initiated it, and there are two aspects of this. Birth certificate fraud is one, and the failure to disclose. So let me say what I have here. The most relevant action here for this paper is the birth certificate fraud, as it was used to focus the discussion on birthplace and away from the parental citizenship requirements to be a natural-born citizen. Barack Obama's failure to disclose information about himself forced Americans to rely on Barack Obama's word, quote-unquote, that he was eligible for the presidency. While the media, the campaigns, the parties, and to a certain extent the voters themselves have a part in this lack of critical thought, two actions by Obama and his campaign ensured he would be able to avoid the natural-born citizen requirement. The question that starts out this section is, how did it happen? Barack Obama, by his own admission, is a dual citizen. How did it happen that he was able to get here? So we all have responsibilities, but the two aspects of Obama are the birth certificate fraud and the failure to disclose information. By the time Obama was a candidate, he had already written two bestsellers about his life and dreams. One key item revealed in his autobiography that his father was a citizen of Kenya and studied only in the United States. On his face, on its face, this revelation meant that Barack Obama did not qualify for the presidency, something many citizen journalists noted and wrote extensively about in the spring of 2008. The pressure from citizens forced the admission from Barack Obama in June of that year that he was a subject of the British Nationality Act, which we read before. The campaign tried to dismiss his British citizenship at birth by stating that, well, forget it, because in 1963 his father became a citizen of Kenya, never forgetting that you cannot lose your British citizenship and so forth. And no matter if he's a citizen of Kenya or not, Barack Obama is not eligible. To shift the focus away from his father's citizenship, Barack Obama campaign posted his certification of live birth on three different websites on June 12, 2008. That certificate of live birth is soon to be proven a forgery. I have a section in here that goes into what exactly the problem was with that document, how it was found, and heavily linked to the people who did the work. But it's a very short, intense summary that makes it clear that COLB has since been proven a forgery. One of the things that's important to note that the state of Hawaii, since Obama released that, has been in the process of manipulating its own vital records to conform to the forged document that Obama produced in 2008. So now in 2011, he releases another certification of live birth. Now remember, in 2008, the certification of live birth, that was available and often used by foreign children, was available to them. It wasn't a certificate of live birth. It wasn't a birth certificate. It was a certification of live birth. So now his quote-unquote birth certificate, long-form birth certificate, is now this long-form certification of live birth. On April 27, 2011, in response to similar pressure from Donald Trump, citizen groups, and the upcoming release of Jerome Corsi's book entitled Where's the Birth Certificate, the White House released a long-form certification of live birth for Barack Obama. It, too, has been proven to be a fabrication. Here again, I have a couple of short, intense, highly referenced paragraphs that describe what is wrong with that electronic image. So the birth certificate fraud should be called natural-born citizen fraud, as it accomplished two purposes that were central to the strategy of avoiding the constitutional requirements for the presidency. First, focusing on the place of birth avoids discussion of the additional requirement that the natural-born citizen be born of two citizen parents. More importantly, it allowed the campaign, the media, the Congress, and the parties to claim that Barack Obama was a, quote, American citizen or citizen. The myth was perpetuated that all one needed to be to grow up to be president is birth in the United States. Critical information was withheld from and not presented to the public for discussion here. Did the media change the definition? No, they just didn't report the whole thing. Is that a lie? No, they just, you never asked, so to speak. Second, putting out fraudulent electronic images, not only one, assured that we would never have a paper document, but it focused the attention of all of us on delineating and documenting the fraudulent images produced. This took vital time away from focusing the discussion on the fundamental disqualifying factor of Barack Obama's dual citizenship. In addition to Barack Obama, the media also failed the American people by refusing to present and misrepresenting vital information that would permit a critical examination of the candidate, Barack Obama, and in particular the constitutional requirements for president. The terms citizen or American citizen were freely substituted for natural-born citizen, with the consequent proof of birthplace sufficient to be eligible for the presidency. The media, the parties, and Congress during the 2008 election were more concerned about political correctness than critical thinking about the constitutional requirements for the president. viewing as racist any question regarding natural-born citizen Barack Obama's sealed records or his background. American citizens had no information on Barack Obama other than what was made available by his campaign or the media, or if they had read his books. Everything was available on Senator John McCain, including whether he was a natural-born citizen. Nothing was available on Senator Barack Obama. Those American citizens, some natural-born and some not, who are aware of the threshold issue of Barack Obama's dual citizenship, thus ineligibility for the presidency, and the fraudulent COLB, made heroic efforts to inform the public, only to be completely ignored by the media, Congress, and the Obama campaign. So we will never have to face our children and grandchildren and say we didn't do anything, because we did. And we did the best we could. So that's the second piece. The third piece of this is really something I'm just writing right now. And it is basically entitled The Fraudulent Certification of Barack Obama as Constitutionally Eligible for the Presidency. We all know how that happened. One of the reasons most Americans and the states were not concerned about Obama's admitted dual citizenship was the assumption that there were vetting mechanisms in place at the state and federal levels, as well as the parties themselves, to prevent a dual citizen from entering office. As it turns out, there were no vetting mechanisms in place, except at the political party level, where the responsibility lies with the respective national political conventions to vet the candidate. The private political parties then certify in writing to the states, under penalty of perjury, the nominated candidate meets the constitutional requirements for the presidency. The certification is then used by the state as proof of constitutional eligibility, and the candidate's name is placed on the ballot. In practicality, this means that a private corporation with no federal, state, or public oversight has the responsibility of ensuring that a candidate meets the constitutional qualifications for president of the United States. It is ripe for graft. The chair of the Democratic National Convention in 2008 was then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, whose signature is on one of the DNC nomination forms certifying that Barack Obama met the constitutional requirements for the President of the United States. Nancy Pelosi's signature is also on a DNC nomination form that has all the same language in all respects as the first, except it is missing the language which certifies the constitutional eligibility of Barack Obama. This was the form that was sent to 49 states and used to place Barack Obama's name on the ballot. 49 states got a form that basically said, this guy's been duly nominated and blah, blah. But it doesn't contain the other part of it that says this certifies that he meets the constitutional eligibility requirements as stated in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 of the U.S. Constitution. So look at that. All the secretaries of state saw that. All the electors saw that. You know, they're setting up plausible deniability here. Oh, I forgot to type that in there, that whole paragraph. But Hawaii, only one state received a form signed by DNC Chair Pelosi, which contained language that Barack Obama met the constitutional qualifications for the presidency. For Hawaii, the language on meeting the constitutional requirements prior to placement on the ballot is required by statute. So they have a law that says you have to put that on there. So what we have is the trip to see Grandma in October of 2008 was a trip basically to have a hearing before the Hawaii Elections Board and the Democratic National Committee and so forth. I bet Pelosi went along as well, because Obama was informed that Hawaii would not certify him. And so we essentially have certain officials just going ahead and overruling and signing the documentation that he was eligible. And that individual was Brian Schatz, who who is now the Lieutenant Governor of Hawaii. And he was, I'm sure, paid to keep quiet for all this time until 2010, and in which he was elected, and he's still probably quiet. But essentially, in addition to Barack Obama's own actions, he had huge help, as we all know. This is a very clear story emerging of what happened to our country and how this could happen. And I'm hoping that this is, you know, work will make it so clear where we are and how this nightmare happened, such that we can now begin to rewind the thing. I have no idea how we're going to do that. That's something that we have to do. But this is going to be a piece that's out there for all to see. We also are going to have to include the other vital information that's been gathered. Reverend Manning gathered the information that basically showed Obama never went to Colombia and was doing something else at the time. All kinds of information there. The Social Security fraud linked to the Selective Service fraud is a huge issue. Of course, we had the forgery. There are many other things that have to be included in this report that not only show the criminality of the person we have in the White House right now and his absolute ineligibility, but really points out to the failure of the institutions and the failure of our system. We have a political parties basically controlling who's in the government. That is not okay, something George Washington warned us against big time. We have a huge opportunity, I think, to keep blowing this out. Yes, I know that the New World Order, that this is all about that. He's, you know, those are our biggest enemies. I know about the Fed. I would rather get rid of the Fed before we audit it, but I agree that we probably have to audit it first before we get rid of it. The 16th Amendment, 17th Amendment, there's so many things that need to be worked on. But this, I think, was the crown, you know, the pinnacle, the point of the New World Order's movement. And if Obama can stay, then there is the precedent for the chipping away. They've chipped away at one of the biggest pieces here. Now we hope that he continues to, you know, basically hang himself on his failed false flags. I pray for all of us that nothing does happen to any of us, and we're not caught in any false flags. I warn any Muslims or anybody who are thinking of attacking us, do not even try it. And I really believe that Obama should be grounded and not allowed to spend our money flying all over the place and not allowed to raise money for his campaign. I'd finally like to close up by saying that, you know, I don't know about Donald Trump. You know, I'm so grateful that he raised these issues, and I'm so grateful he's considering a run and so forth. But I really think now that the Supreme Court and everyone who's avoided this issue, this, if we are not able to get him out through a congressional investigation, we'll have to move into the next phase, and it has to be a campaign challenge. It has to be right there in the campaign where the candidates are required to prove their eligibility. If that gets to the Supreme Court, Sotomayor and Kagan, and in my view, John Roberts, need to recuse themselves or be impeached. They are not allowed to stay on that court and make any decision here, because that is clearly something they could try to slip in, is a one-parent rule. It would be an abomination. But to deny all the other cases and only pick up this one. But I think right now my thinking is a primary challenge, a challenge by a candidate. Candidate has standing. It has to happen before the election happens, because other than that, he's just going to continue on. So let me stop right there and check in. Yeah, me too, Nancy. I hope that he is arrested for all his treasonous actions. It's pure treason, everything that he's doing. And that's why I agree with Pastor Manning on the Laura Ingraham interview, as far as saying the words, you know, it's looking kind of Marxist to me. That's what we've got to deal with here. The guy's a foreigner. This is what he's doing. I want to see him locked out of that White House. I want to see him marched away and his wife and Jared marched away in handcuffs. That's what I would like to see. So with that, I hope to have a couple of very interesting guests next week. I'm going to leave it as a surprise, so I hope that you come back. And I'm going to close this evening with one of my favorite songs. It's kind of a long song. It's called 100 Hearts by Michael Petrucciani. Wishing you all the very best and strength and hanging in there. Keep your powder dry. Keep reading. You know, he wouldn't be doing these kinds of things if we were not making a difference here. And I think we are. So hang in there and keep going, all. I'm really glad we're here. I wish you all the best. Good evening. Don't forget Walls in Your Mind tomorrow, Walls in Our Minds tomorrow night, and we'll see you next week. Good night.